history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. They won't call themselves that, but we can when we realize what they went through on our behalf. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Over the years on this show, we've heard from dozens of Pearl Harbor survivors, people who were there on Oahu on December 7th, 1941, when the world was forever changed. I've encountered them all over the country, Florida, California, Utah, Idaho, Hawaii, of course, you name it. And as we know, their numbers are dwindling, and before too long, there won't be any of them left to tell the story. We're going to hear three different perspectives from men aboard three different ships as we mark yet another anniversary of that day, which has lived in infamy. And of course, we owe that description to our 32nd president. Let's begin this special Pearl Harbor edition of Hometown Heroes with a listen to President Franklin D. Roosevelt's address to the nation on December 8th, 1941.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
So that was FDR on December 8th, 1941. Every time I hear that speech, I notice something that I hadn't really focused on before. Now let's hear from some men who were there at Pearl Harbor, starting with a guy I met in Bonita Springs, Florida last year. He passed away at age 94, about 3 months after our interview. But on December 7th, 1941, Russell Winsett was a 21-year-old from Alabama aboard the battleship USS Pennsylvania.
I was on a machine gun.
50 caliber?
50 caliber machine gun. Mm-hmm. I was up on the foremast because, as you know, the Pennsylvania had two big masts, and I was on the foremast in a nest way the hell up in the sky, and it had the stops on those guns so you couldn't shoot the guy next door, and it only had a certain area you could shoot.
The range of motion was limited, so
right.
You couldn't inadvertently
right.
Shoot your own ship. Sure. Kind of lead me into how that all unfolded from your perspective on that Sunday morning. Had you been up late the night before?
Were no. Well, our Liberty was up at, I don't know, 10 o'clock or something at night, but since we was in dry dock, we couldn't use the facilities on the ship. We had to go out on the dock. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, I went out there to shave and shower and change clothes and all. That's when I, walking down the dock, I heard the sirens go off, battleship, man your station.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I rushed aboard ship and went up to my machine gun nest. lo and behold, ammunition boxes were locked. And I said, I'm not going to climb that ladder back down and back up to get the keys. So I took what they call a dog wrench. It was a pipe about this long and broke a lock. Lo and behold, some young ensign in the Navy, he wanted to put me on report for destroying government property.
He didn't think Japanese planes coming overhead and bombing you guys was a good enough excuse. Huh?
Right. So, anyway, the captain saw that what the report was, and he just shook his head, told it and some beat it.
So you heard the signal for general quarters. You get to your machine gun. Had you seen planes in the sky? Did you know what was happening, or was this just chaotic?
Well, all I could hear a lot, bobbing and everything, guns shooting, but I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm. I've talked to some Pearl Harbor survivors who said, you know, their impression was it was exercises. It was some kind of practice that the Americans were doing.
Right.
But you had an idea from all the noise you were hearing that this is for real.
This is for real because where we sat in dry dock was up above most of them in the water, you know. You could see a lot, but I knew it wasn't no drill. I knew it was for real.
So you man that 50 caliber machine gun. You bust open the ammunition box so you actually have something to shoot at them. And then what are you shooting at? What are you seeing as you look out on that scene?
Well, actually, I couldn't see too much because you had a band around you to hold you up to the gun. And I couldn't see much except when the plane would come in my scope there. I didn't know what was going on. I could hear a lot, and it was pretty scary.
As far as what that looked like, the number of planes that were coming through, or how much time you had to react if you actually saw something, I imagine there's probably nothing that could prepare you for that.
Well, you figure you see two or three come over and are strafing, you knew there's going to be more, so you just sit and wait for them. That's all we can do.
How close did those planes come to where you were?
I'd say some of them 100 feet, come right over the bow of the ship.
You could see markings on those Japanese planes?
Oh, yeah. I could even see the pilot with a Japanese grin.
You could see the face of the pilot?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that was a long time ago, long, long time ago. What did that feel like to be in that situation? Because now we look back and everybody knows, well, Pearl Harbor happened December 7th, 1941. But I can't imagine the feelings that must have been going through you because it was so unexpected for you.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. Believe it or not, I never got scared until it was all over.
Hmm.
Because it really didn't have time to get scared.
How long do you think you were there in that position continuing to man that machine gun?
Oh, probably a couple of hours.
Did it feel like longer?
Felt like all day.
Yeah, I bet. Did you come close to hitting anything?
Well, I could see it because on these belts that was ammunition was in, every fourth one was a tracer, so
right.
You could see where they were shooting. And I don't know if I sank any planes or not, but I shot any down, but I sure as hell hit a lot of them.
So you could see that you were scoring some hits.
Right.
And if you're firing away at this gun, I know the whole purpose of them being there is firing at you guys too.
Right.
How close did some of that incoming stuff come to where you were?
I really couldn't say because most of the damage was in back. I was up forward and it was in the back of the ship, and I don't really know what damage was done back there.
Well, I imagine you're so dialed in on trying to see what's in front of you and fire some ammunition that way that you don't have time to look back.
That's right. That's right.
And you just said that you didn't get scared till it was all over.
Right.
How did you know it was all over?
Well, they sound the alarm. It was all over.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I climbed down out of my machine gun nest and went down below and saw them bringing people by that was in stretchers and all. It was pretty sad.
Had you gotten to know many men aboard that ship?
At the time, actually only people in my division. Because there, if believe it or not, if you were caught outside of your division, that guy put you to work. So we stayed pretty much in one compartment.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew quite a few people, and most of the people in my division I knew. Outside of that, I hardly knew anybody.
I bring it up because I'm just curious if you lost anyone that day that you had become acquainted with.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine, he was from Orlando or somewhere down here in Florida, and he was the ship's photographer. And he had climbed up a leg of the mast. They had ladders on it, and they climbed up there to get pictures. And they shot him right off, killed him. That hurt me bad.
When did you start to grasp the magnitude of what happened there that day, not just with your ship, but the entirety of
it? Well, really, that happened about 8 o'clock in the morning. So after that, you had time to look around. And I'd say a couple of hours, you know, you could see the damage had been done. And you knew there was a lot of lives lost because those ships rolled over and were bombed and everything. A lot of people lost.
Can you paint a picture for us of what it looked like from your vantage point as you scanned the horizon, what you could see?
Well, it'd be kind of hard to describe, but out across the bay, or channel rather, we saw ships laying close to each other, some collapsed, some on fire. It was quite a deal there.
You could see smoke in the air?
Oh, yeah. Smoke and flames, and you could smell bodies burning. That wasn't good.
And I imagine that lingered for a while. It took a while to clean all that up.
Oh, yeah.
What were the hours and the days, maybe even that week after that attack? What was that like to be there for all of that? What kinds of things did you see and experience?
Well, they kept us pretty busy trying to get the ship back in ship shape. And they had our ship in dry dock was almost completed. All they needed was to put two screws on. They did that and flooded the dry dock, and we got on underway a week later and went back to the States.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever wondered? I mean, I just think about the ships that were sunk that day, those ships that were on Battleship Row. I'm just guessing that had you guys not been in dry dock, you would have been on Battleship Row?
That's right. Either they're out at sea, so I guess we were pretty fortunate.
Could have been a lot worse for the Pennsylvania?
Oh, God, yeah. If we'd have been underway or tied up there in the docks, we'd have been a lot worse.
What was the hardest thing for you to swallow as you saw and heard the stories and smelled that what smell that you just described and soaked in all these different things there in the aftermath of that attack? What was the hardest thing for you to come to grips with?
Well, the loss of life, mostly. That was hard to take because I thought that could have been me as well as those guys, you know.
Sure.
That was pretty hard to swallow.
How did it make you feel about the enemy?
Hatred. And it's still there.
I imagine there were a few things said about that among the ship's crew.
Oh, yeah. Lots.
Everyone that, you know, that wasn't at Pearl Harbor that I talked to, I asked them how they found out about Pearl Harbor. And most of them say, well, we heard the president's address on the radio. Did you guys hear any of that?
No.
In the years since, when you hear that speech, you hear the resolve reflected in that speech and the determination that this is what America's going to do. How does that make you feel?
Well, feel pretty good when they figure they're going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And believe you me, we did something about it.
Yes, sir. That was the late Russell Winsett from the USS Pennsylvania. You can link to the full original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll get another December 7th account when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everts RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and three locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everts RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.